Real quick, let me just start off by saying this is Peter Rosenberg, your forever 24/7 champion, host of the Cheap Heat podcast. And I want to shout out the Will Wonder podcast. You know what I wonder? What amazing takes will be given today on this show? Will I ever get the nod, the invite to be a guest on this show? Will I ever feel like coming on the show if I get that invite? We don't know. But you're checking out the Will Wonder podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have officially entered June. This is episode 129 of the Will Wonder Pod. June's busy, man. Pride. We've got Loving Day coming up, which I'll get to here shortly. Juneteenth. It's a busy month. A lot of stuff to celebrate. Anyway, I hope you all have been well since we last spoke. I had a really fun weekend. Shout out to my brother Hoop, who comes on here and does the football talk. Him and his wife gave me the opportunity to DJ their daughter's birthday / graduation party. Had a lot of fun doing that. specifically loved a certain part in the night where his daughter sang Peaches from the Super Mario Brothers movie to Hoop. I was dying. I was actually laughing so hard that I was crying in the background. And a little girl, I would assume she's like 10, 11 years old, came up to me afterwards and she said, "Hey, this is really none of my business." And for me, that was like a weird way to start a, you know, a question or whatever. And I was like, "Yes." And she says, "But are you okay?" I was like, "What do you mean? Am I okay?" She said, "Well, I saw you were, it looked like you were crying when she was singing to her dad." And I said, no, I was laughing. Maybe I was crying in a sense of like laugh or cry laughter. I don't know. What would you call that? But yes, little girl, I'm fine. Thank you. It's very sweet of you. but a lot of fun, good food, good people. Had a great time doing that. So shout out to Hoop and his wife. Sunday, my wife and I, we took our son to my brother's Steady Rock, Michael Martinez and Crosby Stiles, who have been on the podcast before, their kids' birthday parties, conjoined birthday parties, because as you know, they are brother-in-laws, those two, Crosby and Mike, and went to one of the local pools here and had just a lot of fun with that as well. Seen a lot of people I hadn't seen in some time, caught up. My son had a lot of fun. And yeah, just good times over the weekend. I'm recording this the evening of June 9th, which is a Tuesday. Yesterday, I took the entire day off and spent it with my son. And it was just me and him. We had a really fun time. Now that my son's graduated preschool, which, you know, graduation, preschool, whatever. And I didn't mention that last week, by the way. The ceremony, I teared up a bit. Real dads know what I'm talking about. There's no need to go into detail. I'll just say this. Each child had a line that they read from the book, The Little Caterpillar. And if you're a parent, you know, The Little Caterpillar, maybe if, you know, your parents read to you as a kid, you know, The Little Caterpillar. Anyway, my son's line was, "And he wasn't a little caterpillar anymore." I'm like, are you kidding me? He couldn't have said it. He ate 4 apples or something like that. It wouldn't have been as emotional, but yep. There it was, and then my son also got an award for being compassionate, being nice to his fellow students, even helping them with anything they need, raising his hand when another student has a question. And that just makes me and my wife very, very happy. We want a child that is that kind of person, and you know, we're doing our best to raise one, and it was just cool to hear that. Anyways, since he has graduated preschool, we need to find things for him to do while we work. And to replace that time that he would be at preschool until, obviously, he starts kindergarten this fall. Yesterday, he started a basketball camp, and he was locked in. He was like Jimmy Butler in these finals, just focused when it's time to focus, and I loved it. Today, as I worked, my mother-in-law, who, shout out to her, she watches him on Tuesdays and Thursdays, she took him to the basketball camp, and she sent my wife and I a couple snaps throughout the camp, you know, just so we could see some videos. At one point, they were running a competition drill. Basically, they had to run to half court, grab the basketball off a chair, dribble back to the hoop, take a little 5-foot shot. They had to make it, then dribble back to that chair, place the ball there, run back to the line where they started. And when I say my 5-year-old son put a whooping to those 6- and 7-year-olds' asses in his camp and won that competition. Almost cried. Again. Being a dad makes you soft. I'm telling you. Well, I guess I should say being a good dad makes you soft, right? Not necessarily saying that all good dads have to cry at certain points in their child's lives, but they have to feel like they're going to cry. I'm just going to keep it real, okay? Anyways, that catches you up to what I have been up to. I mentioned earlier I was going to talk about Loving Day. I did this last year as well, if you listened then. But it's a very important day to me, and for obvious reasons. But let me just kind of give you a rundown of what Loving Day is. So it is this Monday, June 12th. The Loving in Loving Day is the last names of Mildred and Richard Loving. The Loving Day story begins when they were arrested for being married in 1958 because they were an interracial couple living in Virginia. Their case, Loving versus Virginia in 1967, reached the Supreme Court. Their lawyers argued that the laws against interracial marriage came from slavery laws intended to oppress black people and based on white supremacy. Other states had similar laws. Some of these laws applied to people of other races as well. 9 years after their arrest, the Lovings won their case on June 12, 1967, which is why Loving Day is on June 12th. It was more than a victory for just their families. It struck down all state laws against interracial marriages in the United States. And as some of you may know, and some of you may not know, I am in an interracial marriage. So Loving Day is a very, very important day in our household. Important day in my in-laws' household. Just crazy to think. It wasn't that long ago, 1958 to 1967. But thank you to Mildred and Richard and all those other couples that had to deal with this shit back in the 50s and 60s. But make sure, even if you're not in an interracial relationship or marriage, make sure you celebrate Loving Day or at least understand why it is so important to so many of us. Okay, we are going to get into some NBA talk here in just a moment. But before we do, a word from my guy Dre Rocca, who I did a very fun project with, which, you know, if you listen to this show and you enjoy this show, the hip hop talk that we have, Hip Hop Turning 50, he did a segment with just me. It's available on YouTube. I'll put the link in the podcast description, but ask me 3 questions about hip hop and all around Hip Hop Turning 50. You get to know a little bit about me that you may not know. Little background into me DJing, one of my favorite albums of all time, and then what I think hip hop's 50th birthday cake would be made out of. So make sure you check that out. Again, I will have the link in the podcast description. After NBA talk, I have my guy host from the Beans and Rice podcast. We continue to celebrate, again, 50 years of hip hop. And we discuss Lil Wayne's The Carter Three and Lil Wayne's impact on hip hop itself. So all of that right after this from Dre.
Just a quick message before we continue with the Will Wonder podcast. I'm Dre Rocca, and I do this podcast called the Isolation 20 Podcast. On there, you get a little of this. We all know that high school couple that was the oddball couple. We've all seen it before, and we all wish we got with the skater chick that had the little lip piercing, and she always had like a weird tattoo. Tramp stamp, it usually was like a sunflower or like a dolphin. If your mom was born after 79, she definitely has that tattoo somewhere on her. Guarantee it. And if that's not enough, I do another podcast called Unrestricted where you get a whole lot of this. And I think that's honestly, I think when we're done with this shit, I think we do go into some type of abyss, but not with this conscious, but with the conscious that we had before we got here.
Say that one more time, before we got here.
Yeah. Before you came out your mom's vagina, you had a conscience.
She had a C-section, by the way, so I didn't go through that.
You still came at her. I mean, came at her. Oh, hey, hey, what? Yo. So if that sounds good to you, join us. Available right now on all streaming platforms and YouTube. Now back to the show.
To start this NBA talk, I want to give a big shout out to Daniel over at Jazz Nation. As you know, I am, or you may not know, if you don't know, I am the co-host of the Jazz Nation podcast. We did our interview with Walker Kessler. It is all ready to go. Daniel is going to be putting that on the Jazz Nation Patreon. So there's Patreon is basically a subscription service where you can pay to get exclusive stuff. I mean, he's got all his tiers broken down. If you go look at the Jazz Nation Patreon page, the Walker Kessler episode or interview rather should be available tomorrow, the 7th of June. I had to just look at the calendar. So make sure you subscribe to the Jazz Nation Patreon. There's different tiers, gives you different benefits. It's, I believe, $4, $7, or $10 a month. If you don't have that cash flow, right, we get some people don't. 2 weeks from when the interview drops on Patreon, it'll be available on YouTube. Now, there are differences to the Patreon interview and the YouTube video. Patreon, no ads, uncut, exactly how we filmed it. You get to see everything. YouTube, it'll be a condensed interview with some ads from what I understand. So if you want the full, uncut, unedited interview, which, you know, we get into some crazy stuff with Walker Kessler, okay? I can't let the cat out of the bag. But I'll just say, we talked about his favorite restaurants, a few other things, okay? make sure you subscribe to Patreon again. All right, NBA. Get to the finals here in a moment. Some news, obviously, Kyrie asking Dallas to go get LeBron James. Bring him to Dallas. Kyrie Irving is going to be an unrestricted free agent here in July. So what the hell does this all mean? Well, conspiracy theory me thinks this is Kyrie planting a seed to find a way out. Let's say he signs with Dallas and says, you know, you didn't bring LeBron. I want out. Or it's just an excuse to walk. There's a lot of things that I think about Kyrie Irving, and, you know, he even says it himself. People try to paint a narrative about me, so I won't even do that. He's an incredible basketball player when he plays basketball. And outside of this, realism says Dallas has no assets available to acquire LeBron James. A trade centered around Tim Hardaway Jr., which respect to Tim Hardaway Jr., respect to every NBA player, because they are better than any of us just walking around the street, better than any of us that talk in front of a microphone talking basketball. But a trade centered around Tim Hardaway Jr. is not happening to get LeBron James, even at age 38, age 40, age 52. Okay, let's be real about this. Shout out to my boy Tom Fitton, who is a Dallas Mavs fan, who tried to give something along the lines of, well, LeBron could just retire, then come back. And I just want to say to you and any other Dallas Mavs fan out there that, you know, listens to these Dallas Maverick fan podcasts or are a part of these blogs or fan pages, I need you to get your head on straight. Get out of your fandom and understand that's not happening. Why the hell is LeBron James going to go to Dallas? Out of all places, all teams he could play for. Now, if in next year Dallas finds a way to draft Bronny James and LeBron says, I want to play with him, then okay, sure, I guess. But I just don't see a way for LeBron to Dallas. NBA Finals are tied up 1-1. Game 2 was interesting to watch. MPJ, Michael Porter Jr. looked like a lost puppy out there on defense. Couldn't score a bucket either. I believe he only had 5 points. Jokic became the primary scorer, which if you don't really watch these games or you're just more of a casual fan and you would say, well, yeah, Jokic is their best player. Yes, But that's not his normal role, just to be the main scorer. He's more of a facilitator. He does get a ton of points. But in this game, the supporting cast wasn't where it needed to be, especially guys like MPJ, Murray, KCP, Aaron Gordon. They didn't look great. Miami looked good. Gabe Vincent played a really good game. He's going to make some really, really solid money this offseason, I believe. You know, he's probably going to have to go somewhere outside of Miami to get that, but he looks like a strong player, someone who adds a lot of value at that point guard role. Good shooter, plays pretty good defense, so I'm interested to see where he goes after this season is over. Again, tied up 1-1. Going to Miami Wednesday night, game 3. With all this said that we've already talked about, MPJ looking like a lost puppy, Jokic having to be the primary scorer, Vincent looking good. Jimmy Butler, I believe, was a little banged up in the game, still played decent. I still think Denver wins this series, but MPJ, Jamal Murray, KCP, they can't go 5-for-16 from 3. Next game's Wednesday night. Miami's going to be rocking, kind of. We all know how Miami is. They get there a little late, the fans. But with this being the NBA Finals, maybe that's different. Maybe they say, you know what? We're all going to get there early, or at least on time. I don't know. We'll see. Still going to say Denver in 5. I might catch some shit for that. Hip Hop 50 up next.
Hey, Alexa. Can you show me a new barber?
Don't worry, I got you.
Boogie Down Barbershop in Taylorsville is now open. Anything from gentleman's cuts, taper, fade, or if you want to treat yourself to a nice hot towel shave, Boogie Down Barbershop has you covered. Cuts for men and kids, book your appointment today at boogiedownbarbershop.com.
Hip hop, what's that out in the dark? Hip hop, hip hop, what's that out in the dark? They used to do it out in the park. The park.
Ladies and gentlemen, as we continue to celebrate hip-hop turning 50 this August, I thought I would make a pit stop at an MC that isn't quite my favorite, but I have to recognize his impact, and that would be Lil Wayne. We are at the 15-year anniversary mark of Lil Wayne's The Carter 3. I have my friend Host from Beans and Rice joining me to talk Carter 3, to talk Wayne's impact. Before we get into all that, Host, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. Good to talk to you. Right before recording, I said it's been a while, so we need to link up another time and actually chill. It's been a while.
Yeah, go get a drink or just go get some food. As long as you leave Beefy at home. I see him every Sunday. I get enough of Host Beefy.
Yeah.
Just kidding, Beefy. I don't want him coming at me this Sunday when we play ball. Anyways, let's get into... let's get into the Carter 3. So to set this up a little bit, Lil Wayne at this time, pre-Carter 3. So we're talking June 10th, 2008 was when this album dropped. But beforehand, you know, Wayne had a somewhat successful career up to this. He had released the Carter in 04, the Carter 2, which is one of my favorite Wayne albums, before he gets into kind of this new sound. And then like Father Like Son with Baby, who Stunt Like My Daddy. Once you have a son, Host, that's going to be, you know, the song that you ride out to.
It'll be Poppy though, instead of Daddy.
Yes. Exactly. 06 through 07, man, Wayne was just on features and mixed. He was putting out mixtapes. The Drought Is Over, all kinds of The Drought, Dedication, all of these mixtapes. And just to go through some of his features, it's crazy. Gimme That with Chris Brown, Make It Rain by Fat Joe, We Taken Over with Khaled, Duffel Bag Boy with Play a Circle, which a lot of people who may not be familiar with Play a Circle, there was an artist in that group named Titty Boy who would later become Two Chainz. Another Khaled, I'm So Hood. I mean, he just kept, at this time I was like, it kind of feels like Wayne's oversaturated and he hasn't even put out an album.
And don't forget, I mean, he also had with Kevin Rudolph, that whole rocks scene he tried getting on.
Yep. And then he kind of tried to continue that throughout his career, but it just never really, like, I don't know. For me, it didn't stick. I'm sure there were fans that.
I didn't follow it. Maybe it did stick, but yeah, from a hip hop perspective, I didn't. I don't follow that part.
Yeah. End of 07, this was highly controversial in my circles. MTV put out a poll saying that Wayne was the number one MC in the game. And when I tell you I lost my shit.
This is 07?
07. They put him at number one. Number two was T.I. Three was The Game. Four, Andre 3000. Five, Kanye West. Six, Young Jeezy. Seven, Jay-Z. Eight, 50 Cent. Nine, Common. And 10, Jim Jones.
What was Three Stacks doing back in 07? He doesn't even have like a solo album.
No, no solos, but he hopped on a ton of features. And it just, his features were very, very important. He was on a DJ Drama, on the DJ Drama album, the Gangsta Grillz album.
The storytelling part four? Okay. Yep.
He showed up on Walk It Out, the remix. He also showed up on the Throw Some D's remix. Like, he had nothing by himself, but when he showed up on these remixes, it was huge. Even Chris Brown's Deuces, which kind of was slept on.
Oh, no, that one. I mean, the remix was so good, but yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's Wayne, you know, number one MC in 2007. And it's like, oh, God. For me, not so much.
Who do you think deserved it, 07?
I mean, you know me. I'm a big J guy. Yeah. I would have been comfortable with The Game in 07 being number one. But to me, it probably should have been J every year, right? But that's just me being a
personal bias. Yeah.
Yeah, I think around that time, Game had put out LAX. He was coming off of...
Not LAX, was actually 2008, which actually impacts on my review for the Carter 3. That was a very important summer for me.
Got it. Ooh, I can't wait to hop into that because you're a little bit younger than me, so I want to get kind of your thoughts of when that dropped, right? Yeah. But let's set up the album. So we got into what Wayne was coming off of. The top hip-hop songs on Billboard are like a... Have You Seen Me on a back of a milk carton, minus Lil Wayne's number one with Lollipop, which was a huge record, huge. I was DJing a lot of weddings. I wasn't quite into clubs at this time, but when I was, like, I mean, anywhere I DJed, this song was played, and the remix was just, you know, great. But then you get into number two, Plies featuring Neo, Bust It Baby Part 2. Haven't heard from Plies in a mighty long time. Three, Flo Rida and T-Pain, Low, which was a huge club record. Four was Rick Ross and T-Pain, The Boss. Number two was Two Pistols, T-Pain and Tay Dizzum. I guarantee if, you know, you're somewhat newer to hip-hop or you just didn't listen in like 07, 08, you're like, who's Plies? Who's Two Pistols and Tay Dizzum? But, I mean, those songs are huge. What do you remember about music at this time prior to Wayne's album coming out?
So this would be essentially the 06, 07 era. I'm in high school at this point. So you're seeing kind of like the rise of the Southern rap. Like you see, what's their name? The one that says, if you ride rims, you got to ride hard or flats. Franchise Boys.
Franchise
with the YTs, yeah. Yep. You had like this, it was like the party hip hop music, which I liked too. Don't get me wrong, but that's what was starting to take over where, because streaming still wasn't popular back then. That wasn't a thing. It was still radio. You would go out, you'd buy CDs. So
illegally download.
Had blown up. Yeah, allegedly, okay. the LimeWire was fantastic back then.
Oh, top notch.
So, Game was like, I've always been an East Coast and mostly Southern fan. West Coast, I wasn't a huge fan of, but that's why I loved Game. Like, Game popped up on the scene. He had his issues with G Unit, so he's on his own now. And he's, in my personal opinion, killing it with every album he's dropped since. He made a splash on the scene. You have, I know you always say he who must not be named. I'll name him easily, Mr. Kanye West.
Dude, I miss the old Kanye, yeah.
Yeah, he's dropped, what, three back-to-back-to-back certified classics.
Right, for sure.
Fantastic. He's changed the game in his own respective way. And Wayne, you couldn't get away from him. I know you said that he was all over the place since the Carter 2. The Carter 2, I think, was 05?
Yes.
I think it was 05, so because I had just, like, had my learner's permit before I got my driver's license. Yeah. So, like, but I love the Carter 2. I think I'm in a minority when I think that the Carter 3 is not as good as the Carter 2. That's my personal opinion.
Right there with you. 2 is my favorite Wayne album.
Yeah, I just think that three, and we can, I don't know if you want to get into it now or later, but three card, well, later, you were just my history of it. So a lot of Jay, we had the Rock Nation, right? That whole collective group. Mm-hmm. You had Terror Squad trying to hold on to whatever little fame they had off of
coming off of Lean Back. Yep.
Yeah. So it was a really good time. It was a highly competitive era for music, and it started to change because you had the mafioso gangster style, and that's where Kanye started kind of influencing it elsewhere. But
mm-hmm. I thought this was an interesting time because this is right. So I graduated in 2004, so this is coming, you know, just shortly after that, and it's a weird shift in music to where there was like. I mean, obviously, when I was in high school, you could download albums, but it became very easy, and you could get full albums around like 05, 06, mm-hmm. you know, and it was simple. Like back when I was in high school, you could get a song, but a lot of times those songs would be off of like a Clue mixtape or...
Yep, so they'd have the DJ yelling in the background, kind of ruining the song.
It took a good amount of time to find the actual like, album cut.
Yeah.
Which could be very frustrating. You know, and I'm saying very frustrating, like I was paying for the music, but you know, or digging through crates, not at all, but you know what I mean.
Well, hey, you spent hours looking for it. You want some return on investment, so I'm with you there.
Exactly. But this was an interesting time. There you started to see a lot of artists mm-hmm. come up where there would be a single where they were super hot, and then some of them would put their albums out, some of them wouldn't, where it seemed like years before, even if there was a hot single, those albums came out no matter what. Like, I don't know if Two Pistols ever put out an album, and if he did, I surely missed it.
So did I. I mean, that was something that was, I don't know if I overlooked it or not. Another thing, I mean, again, I think Southern was making a big surge, which I don't know if I can understate it. Like, South started, I mean, you mentioned T.I., right?
Yeah.
And you had Wayne, considered South. You had... Right.
David Banner was huge at this time. 3-6,
Ross started making appearances mm-hmm. pretty soon after. You had who? Trick Daddy.
Yeah. And Mike Jones was still around a little bit, you know,
for sure. Yeah. And then the whole Texas people collect Chamillionaire. I almost said Chamillionaire because I always said that as a joke.
Yeah, Chamillionaire, Paul Wall, Slim Thug. It was an interesting time.
I think it was actually an interesting time too for R&B because I know they're almost always kind of synonymous in mm-hmm. the culture, but they've never been as collaborative as back then, in my opinion, where you see the crossovers with like Chris Brown, you had Neo making a lot of moves with a lot of stuff hip-hop with Usher. Artists. Yes.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was going to mention this. Oh, Dala, he's from ATL. Do you remember Dala?
Oh, for sure.
The Heartbreak Collision. So that was actually very unique too. And I think that was pretty nice.
He was an artist that, you know, I think he had a lot of promise, and unfortunately he had passed away. He was murdered, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he was gunned down.
Yeah, but he had some songs that were, were big, and it just felt like there was a lot of momentum behind him.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, yeah.
I think the South has always been the most creative out of the regions as far as music goes.
I think so too, because, I mean, even from a standpoint of when hip-hop was young, they really had to come out and make something different because, you know, and you hear a lot of Texas rappers talk about this, like there was no big record companies in Texas, right? Like you had, like they talk about guys in New York, you could just walk down to these record companies, or in California, different places like that. You could walk to these record companies' buildings. Who knows if you get in? But I agree. I mean, guys like Ludacris were very, very creative at this time.
Well, even the producers, right? You had Timbaland, you had Missy Elliott, who produced as well. You had the Neptunes. You had, even as artists, not necessarily producers, you had Outkast.
Yep.
And they all produced like different sounds, different contexts, different themes and topics that were just so unique, and even the way that they would express it. So I actually give the South the credit for evolving the sound more than West or East.
Oh, for sure. And it's funny because if you would have... You know, around this time, if you would have asked a lot of hip hop purists, they would have been like, nah, I don't
like that. Which is just denial at that point, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I remember KRS-One in interviews talking about, you know, what did he call it? The ice period or something like that, where it was, he compared it to when the Ice Age was going on in the world. And then from that came life. And he was just talking about how the South was, in a sense, just worried about jewelry. And I'm like, nah, I mean, maybe no. Cash money.
Well, the mainstream at that point, right? Again, yeah. The radio wave, sure. But outside of that, if you didn't listen to it, you'd get other stuff.
Yep, for sure. All right, let's get into this album. So released June 10th, 2008. It was on Cash Money, Motown, and Young Money Entertainment. Young Money was very new, Lil Wayne's record label. Again, as we said before, there was a number of mixtapes that Wayne had put out, guest appearances on other artists' records. But it had been a minute since he dropped his own. So the Carter 3 comes out. The album features Jay-Z, that is. I just say Jay like I know him.
T-Pain. I think most people would know that.
Yeah, T-Pain. Of course T-Pain's on it. There needs to be... I need to do a whole episode on T-Pain and his effect on hip-hop because, my God. Fabulous, Robin Thicke, Busta Rhymes, Joel Santana, Babyface, Bobby Valentino, and Kanye West, as well as Static Major, who had passed away not too long before this album came out. I believe it was February 08. He's the one who sings the hook on Lollipop. Carter 3 debuted at number one on the U.S. Billboard 200, selling over a million copies in its first week, which was like unheard of. It was the fastest selling album in the United States at that time in the history. It reached 2.8 million copies at the end of 08. And to this day, the Carter 3 has gone 8 times platinum in the U.S. and 2 times platinum in Canada. So that was interesting because a lot of times Canada doesn't really buy up the albums. All of these different, episodes I've done or segments I've done, rather, it seems like Canada is like just lagging behind everyone. But for him to go 2 times platinum in Canada is pretty nuts. But I remember prior to this album coming out, obviously Lollipop was huge. And then when A Millie came out, that was like I don't even know what to say. Like as playing in the clubs, DJing parties, A Millie was just a fucking heat rock. But what do you remember when this album came out or just leading up to it? The first single was Lollipop, which was released before the album came out. A Millie was the second single. And then we got Money with T-Pain, Mrs. Officer with Bobby Valentino, and then Comfortable was the last single. But this time, but getting the album, hearing the album, what are your first thoughts of Carter 3?
Well, the singles leading up to it, I wasn't impressed. I know specifically Lollipop being the first one, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't like the sound. I'm like, this sounds kind of corny. I wasn't a big fan. He still had his punchlines, don't get me wrong. So like lyrically, he still had his thing going on, but I'm a big sound guy, and I think everyone would argue the same. Then A Millie, it was a good beat. If you're like a rapper that just wants to freestyle over a single beat,
exactly.
The beat goes nowhere. It's very monotone. Yeah. And I've said this actually about Tupac and Biggie, and people get mad at me for it, but they have a lot of beat selections that are hyper monotone and it drives me nuts. So I don't even like those songs. And then what was the one after? Was it Mrs. Officer?
After was Got Money with T-Pain. If you need a T-Pain song, right?
Yeah. I mean, that one, I'm like, okay, cool. This might be the saving grace.
Great music video too. Great
music. I never watched the music video. I never really watched music videos as a kid.
Damn.
Yeah, I know. That's the whole thing I talked to Beefy about. Maybe. And you're welcome, okay, everybody? It's so that one, obviously great. Like, it's an excellent song. I loved it. And then we get to Mrs. Officer, which I didn't like it because everyone would only quote the wee-wee-wee-wee thing, the little siren. So that got like on my nerves pretty quick. I did like the song, though. I will say I did like the song, but it got on my nerves. And then listening to the album, again, coming off of Carter 2, and obviously some mixtapes in between. This is obviously just an anecdotal or a personal opinion. It felt like the label was pressing him on being strictly just a punchline rapper, where he didn't get to showcase his dexterity in some storytelling ability or painting better pictures. It was strictly just metaphor after metaphor after simile after metaphor. It's like, okay, we get it. You're the punchline king, arguably. But we didn't get to see his entire lyrical dexterity.
Yeah.
Because it felt very contrived. And from an industry perspective, yes, it had his personality in it, but it didn't have all of his personality. And that might be just me being weird about it. But I just, That's where I think the album falls flat. There's not the Wayne creativity that we see on mixtapes or the first Carter where he's learning, you know, and finding, you know, learning the ropes. And then the Carter 2 where I think he excelled in almost every facet of the game.
I'm with you on that with the Carter 2. Like, again, my favorite album of his. When this came out, it just felt like a lot of songs that were trying to be radio, like mainstream songs, right?
Yep. Which is that's where I said
which
contrived.
Is whatever,
yeah.
And then they threw in the "You Ain't Got Nothing" with Juelz and Fabulous, which just felt like a leftover from "I Can't Feel My Face," which was the mixtape that Juelz and Lil Wayne had put out. But obviously, Alchemist beat, you know. So I was like, oh, that's cool, but. The album itself I didn't love, and I felt like, again, just like you said, it was just too radio, too mainstream. I mean, he had a lot of great producers on this, especially for the time. Bangladesh, who did Amili. I like the Amili beat for what it is, for being able to play it in clubs and parties. It's a great song for that. But if you're just, you know, trying to listen to an album, maybe not like what you're looking for.
Yeah, but then again, I mean, you're a DJ, so you obviously know I can't argue with the numbers, but Amili's just so flat as a beat. I can't see myself enjoying it in those settings.
It rang off, I'm telling you. It rang off.
I'm sure it did. I'm sure it did, but I mean, he had Kool & Dre.
And Kool & Dre, Swizz, so. Kanye West, David Banner, again, Alchemist, Maestro, who was really popular at the time. And did a lot of stuff, but that song, the opening song, Three-Peat, I didn't love. I actually didn't even love Mr. Carter. You know, I like Jay's verse,
which sucks.
Yeah.
In defense, we said it earlier. He was everywhere. He was inescapable as an artist, mm-hmm. and honestly, T-Pain too. I think that whole era was ran by those two for like maybe 2 years, respectively.
Oh, for sure.
And I don't know if that had maybe it played a lot, because I was like. You've oversaturated the market with your music, which whatever. Yep. I don't think it's a good market scheme. Maybe to make money in the interim, but not the long term.
Yeah.
And so when I get this industrialized, very radio centric album, that's probably what bothered me and pushed me away from it.
That makes sense.
And I don't know if this is the right time to bring it up, because we were talking before we started recording. The game, like, this is summer of 08, so I'm just graduated, mm-hmm. right? And so I remember, like, this was yesterday, literally. This dropped June something, like early June, because it was, like, right after graduation.
Yeah, June 10th, yep.
And then August, later August, mid to late August, we had LAX drop.
Yeah. Right?
The game. Game, my absolute all-time, still remains my all-time favorite hip-hop artist. I think he's the best out of the West Coast. Including Pac, including everyone from the West, I think he's better than them all.
Ooh, okay. That's
and
good.
LAX, from top to bottom, I think is a fantastic album. You see a lot of different game aspects to it. Yeah, sure, he has some radio-style mm-hmm. songs that go in. So that album, to me, washed this album. So I never really enjoyed this album the same way other people enjoyed it.
Yeah. I mean, I loved LAX. The first single was kind of whatever with Keisha Cole. I think Game's Pain. But then Dope Boys was really hard. My Life with Wayne I thought was good. But then the album as a whole was just really good. Game was huge at this time. And the group I was in at the time, The Strangers, we were able to open up for him at Saltaire. It was the LAX tour, and it was him and Nipsey Hussle. And we were just one of two local openers at the time. Chino For Real was the other one who, you know, if you're from Salt Lake City, you knew Chino For Real had huge songs on the radio at this time. But that, to see Game at that point, like post G-Unit and just killing it, was really cool, number one, but just showing that he could put out good bodies of work, you know, because a lot of the talk was, obviously, the documentary, a lot of people say, well, you know, 50 helped with damn near that whole thing. And you can hear touches of 50 in that album for sure.
Of course.
But Game, I think, elevated himself as an artist afterwards. But we'll have to do a whole Game episode. That would be a good one.
Yeah. I actually don't think he has a single bad album until he joined, like, on that Young Money collective, which was after Jesus Peace. I can't even remember the album. Like, I stopped listening to his complete albums after Jesus Peace.
Yeah, he did the Operation Kill Everything. I don't know.
I like documentary too, actually.
I like documentary too. I even like 1992, where he does like the old school. Yeah, he's got his cool shit. I mean, I like Drillmatic, but it was way too long. I thought it would have been a great album if he would have cut that bitch down to 16 songs instead of 38 or whatever, 40, whatever was on there. But we'll get back in the way. We will have to do a game episode. And my boy Chacon will have to come on because he is I mean, I can't tell him shit in any type of argument about game. He is the biggest game fan on the planet. So you guys should know.
I'm a massive game fan, man. Yeah. He's in my top five.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's great. So we think about Lil Wayne after this album. Again, 8 times platinum in the United States. 2.8 mil sold at the end of 2008. Wayne starts Young Money, and this is really where we see his impact post Carter III, in my opinion, his impact on hip hop, even to now, obviously. Young Money signing Drake and Nicki Minaj, who are like the two of the probably five
the perennial
biggest
talents of the 2010s for sure.
Yeah. And Drake, even now, like you look at the streaming numbers, you know, he's out of this world still. So for Wayne to sign those two, and they were, you know, and Drake had cool stuff, Nicki had cool stuff. They're much better now than they were back then.
Yo, they've like developed for sure. Yeah,
if you listen to some of the old Drake stuff, you're like, what?
But that goes back to the influence of, I don't know if it was Wayne specifically or if that was Baby's influence. I mean, Wayne's always been a punchline rapper, but that's where I say the mixtapes. Like the mixtapes, there's more in-depth metaphors versus. That's why just like the Carter III fell kind of flat on its face from my perspective. So
yeah, I feel you because that mixtape run he had was huge.
Massive.
From,
piece.
You know, 06 to the beginning of 08 was, there was a lot. And I, if I remember correctly, when the hell did Hurricane Katrina happen? Because that, you know,
that
obviously struck New Orleans. Is that 06?
07.
06, okay.
07.
So coming off of that, I mean, he had a lot to say. And that's why he made those mixtapes, I think. A lot of that. And then we get the Carter III again, which is mostly just radio commercial records.
Out of respect, Katrina actually happened in 05.
05. God damn.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just meshing my years together. But again, Wayne signs those artists to Young Money. Huge. So just off the strength of that alone, his impact on hip hop for the next, you know, 15 years is enormous. Nicki probably being the biggest female artist in hip hop for so many years and maybe even right now. I don't know. Hip hop is in
I'd
a
say
weird
right now
space
it'd
with female
go to Cardi,
MCs.
But I think overall, as far as sell, if you're just going to look strictly at numbers, I do think she's the biggest of all time.
Yeah. And then we get into what I blame Lil Wayne for with his oversaturated ass at this time and the way he kind of, you know, had that tone, that mumbling shit in some of his records, spawning guys like Lil Uzi Vert, Trippy Red, NBA YoungBoy, not to hate on these artists by any means, because they have their own following and they're, you know, big enough. But I feel like he is the reason we got mumble rap and the reason we have some of these rappers, because he was able to do it. Obviously he's a great lyricist. And like you said, the stuff he did on those mixtapes are amazing prior to Carter III albums, as well, Carter II, but he just made it to where you made the noise.
You know, I agree with you in that sense, but I have a different angle.
Okay. Let's hear it.
He, and this might be just a Southern thing, of course, especially, you know, shout out to my Southern friends. The whole lean situation, I think, is what impacted this, right? So yeah. we heard it from Game 2. What was it? Was it like Father Like Son, where he's like slurring his words because he says that on the track with Busta Rhymes. He's like, I'm off the peach snobs or whatever, right?
On isn't that just the documentary? Hold on, I'll go back and look, but go ahead.
The name of the song, but either way. Regardless, like you
well,
hear
yeah, that's
him slurring
what I mean.
On it.
I think the song is the documentary.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's
the title track. Yeah.
So Wayne, notoriously a sipper, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the guy is a genius. I don't care what anyone says as far when it comes to lyrics. He can just hop in the booth and freestyle and it's going to sound nice. And he's going to have nice bars in it. He would just do that because he was doing it so much. I think he just almost even got bored, right? Like he was so good at it. He made so much music that it was almost just a side hobby to him. He made his money. He'd hop in the booth. He'd have that like slur. So I actually think he popularized almost the drug use versus drug selling. And this is where we saw kind of the shift. Like Kanye had the backpack rap that people refer to. So it's not really thuggish anymore.
Right.
And you have Wayne, who, in my opinion, since he's so massive, ushering in this drug use and glorifying it. So the young aspiring rappers that saw him adopted that style. And we know that to me, mumble rap, I've always associated with the, oh, I got the purple drink. I got this going on, you know,
for sure.
We've seen so many pass because of the drug use, unfortunately, but I'm not having him shoulder the blame. I'm just saying he influenced it so much that that's why I think mumble rap became a thing. Yeah. I don't think he intended to mumble rap. He was just like, I'm on drugs. I want to do something. I'm going to rap. It worked because it's Wayne. And then so everyone's like, I'm going to emulate that. And I mean, I guess it worked too, but not to our...
Not to our pleasure.
Enjoyment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really enjoy it. There were a couple songs, don't get me wrong, that I'm like, oh, these are pretty good. But as a whole, I'm glad that that has fizzled out for the most part.
Yeah, for the most part it has. There's still artists that are around.
I guess maybe it's not as prominent. So.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, this 08 was a very interesting time in hip hop because it's also like, I think that 06 to 09, maybe even 10, is kind of like that blog era of hip hop where we're getting to know about a lot more artists, right? But Wayne was just at the top. Wayne, Game, Jay, Kanye were all at the top at this time, but these other artists were kind of bubbling up. Due to all the blogs, you know, and that's how I found a lot of music back in the day. Two Dope Boys, I would go on that website. There were so many different websites you could go to find new music, and really, really good artists as well. But by this time, Wayne was just massive.
And he was bona fide. Yeah, he was. Yeah. People knew. Even if you didn't listen to hip hop, you knew Wayne.
Yep. And I don't know if he ever, I could be wrong, but I don't know if he ever reached this level again.
I think this was
kind of his peak.
It was. I mean, the Carter Three. I mean, people loved it, and they're allowed to, of course. Mm-hmm. He's never had anything as big. I don't know if because I'm personally, I know you're not a huge fan. I'm actually a massive Wayne fan. When the Carter Five, like that was pushed a lot, right? It was like, oh, Wayne's coming back. I guess that he was trying to sober up, you know, at that point. So I felt like the build up to the Carter Five. I actually really, really enjoyed that album. Some people hated it. I loved it. I actually still feel that one arguably might be better than the Carter Three as well.
Oh, okay.
But it was never to like, I felt that there was a lot of buzz for him, but that era is come and gone. Hip hop has, and I still think will always be a young man's game. The young crowd dictates what's popular because they're the ones that contribute the most money to it.
Yeah, and they're the ones who
consume
it the most. You know, like that's why if you look on different DSPs now, like I don't know, just I mean, let me get to this point. I did love Carter Five as well. It was another album similar to Game's Drillmatic that I thought was too long. And if he would have cut it down, it would have been much better. But I did love Carter Five. Let's see. So just as an example, I'm going to pull up the top charts, the top hip hop charts right now on Apple Music.
Yeah. And as you're doing that, let me explain. I know I've said it now probably twice and people are like, hey, shut the fuck up. But I'm trying. If you're younger and you didn't grow up in this era, it was inescapable. It's like, I don't even have TikTok, and I'm familiar with TikTok videos. Like that stupid soundbite where it's like that woman that's high treble or whatever, and it says, "Oh no, 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 no!"
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That physically makes me ill because I hate it. I've heard it so much. Wayne was on that level back when social media wasn't like what it is now. You couldn't escape me. You'd always hear Wayne. But anyway,
That's perfect.
That's how big he was. He's undeniably one of the biggest hip hop artists of all time. And I don't know if anyone could, like, there's not going to be enough hip hop artists moving forward other than probably Drake that are newer that will eclipse his stardom.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Very few can touch that level of stardom.
And again, this was a time there wasn't DSPs, right? You couldn't just
strictly album sales. You physically buy, or download it.
Yep. And so for this album to sell that many records is pretty incredible. Like 8 million in 08 when you could just say, fuck it, I'm going to just download everything. It's a lot, you know.
I think Apple, you were allowed to download just specific tracks, which was kind of revolutionary at the time. But generally, you either bought the whole album and it sucked and you're like, hey, I'm out of $13, or you preferably bought the whole album and liked most, if not all of it.
Yep. I don't know why Billboard's giving me a hard time, but iHeart's top 40, hip-hop and R&B, so I'll just say the hip-hop. The number one hip-hop song is In Ha Mood by Ice Spice. Are you familiar?
I know who she is. I have no idea what the song is.
Right.
In Ha Mood?
In Ha Mood,
I thought you were speaking Arabic for a moment, and I realized I know what you mean. It's the vernacular.
Next would be, man, like it's slim right now. The next one would be Spin Bout You, Drake and 21 Savage.
Okay.
Then Drake, Search and Rescue, which really he's singing most of that song. NLE Choppa, Ain't Gonna Answer. And Lil Durk's All My Life. Those would be the top hip-hop songs. Tyler, the Creator's right there with Dogtooth, but it's kind of interesting just to see the charts now.
Yeah, and this is not me hating. This is just a product of the times. Hopefully they do, but we're in an era where a lot of people don't have a lot of staying power. I personally like Tyler, the Creator. I'm a bit biased. I like him. I don't like every project, but I'm a massive fan of his creativity. And then I actually really like NLE Choppa. But Dirk, I even know what he looks like. He is pretty, he has that stardom, I guess, aspect of it.
Yeah.
I can't tell you a single Dirk song.
His new song, the one that's on the chart there, All My Life. So when I'm with my son in the car, we listen to his songs a lot, right? Like songs that he loves as a kid. But then I try to throw on other things. So like I'll throw on like, there's like a classic hip hop playlist where the music is clean, right? Cause I don't want him cussing. He hears that enough from me. I don't want to hear him anywhere else. Then there's also like Ebro from Hot 97 is on Apple Music and he has a radio show on there and they play all the like newer records, older records, but they're all edited. So I'll play that. And that All My Life song came on with Lil Durk and J. Cole, which I think you should listen for J. Cole's verse alone. But it has little kids singing the hook and it's very catchy. So I don't know. With that one, Lil Durk maybe, you know, might find a way to stick around, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've known and heard of him for years now. So I think he probably has kind of that staying power. Or I don't know if his fan base is just so vocal that he commands that. But Young Thug is the other one too. I actually like Young Thug.
Yeah, Young Thug for me, initially, I was like, God, not another one, right? Not another.
A byproduct of Wayne. Okay.
Yeah. God damn
it. I actually like the way he does it.
Yeah, Thug has had some really good records that I've enjoyed. But yeah. All right, I think we'll stop there. I think we kind of nailed our point home, you know, how big this record was, but not necessarily our favorites. But it's something that imprinted in time. Especially like you said, if you weren't around at that time, not paying attention, or if you were younger, but that 2007 to 08 period, Wayne just had everything in a chokehold and was everywhere, just like TikTok is now. That is a fucking perfect analogy.
He really was. He was and still is, I think, a very special MC. I'm a big fan of his. I don't think you can understate his impact, his popularity. Or even his skill set. So even though this album is definitely not one of my favorite Wayne albums, him as an artist is crazy impactful. And I would say, I don't know whether you're old enough or just know enough of hip hop, you can't deny someone putting him in the Mount Rushmore. Like, I don't think you can't make a case for him not belonging on it. That's my opinion on Wayne.
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't be on mine just because I don't like his ass. No, I'm kidding.
That's fine, but I don't think you could respectfully argue someone he doesn't deserve it. He does.
To be able to take to step back and look at the grand scheme of things, what he has done just as an individual artist and kind of the groundwork he laid, and then also his impact for the next 20 years, you know, it's huge. So,
yeah,
I would hatefully agree with you.
And that's what makes hip hop phenomenal. We can have these discussions. We can disagree. I don't see anyone arguing about which pop star. I mean, maybe there is that, but not to this level, right?
Nah, like,
Taylor Swift is better than, well, and I'm sure that exists on the internet,
somewhere.
But not to the point where we dissect it. No, lyrically, this is what they did, their punchline. So any of you guys that are watching or listening to the, not watching, listening, go ahead and subscribe to Will Wonder, my boy. He has always, especially the hip hop part. I'm very biased to that. He has good sports stuff, but I really only watch basketball for the most part, but for sure for the music, go ahead and hit the subscribe and follow Will Wonder or Doug. I find it weird when people call you Doug. I've never called you that.
Well, you know, it really depends on how people had met me, right? Like if it was, I mean, even people from like 20, I wouldn't say 20 years ago, 15 to 20 years ago, some of them met me as Will Wonder, DJing, being in the group I was in. So I still have people that call me that. That's, you know, why I have the name of the podcast is the name of the pod, but a lot of people still call me that. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, you call me whatever you like, host, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, Will seems cool. Maybe one day I'll get on personal terms and call you Doug, but until then it's going to be Will. Yeah.
So. We have to have a barbecue before you can call me that.
But then I'm going to think of that bald cartoon character. His name was Doug too. And I'm like,
it was. Yeah. And believe me, as a kid in the 90s, like I heard that all the fucking time. Yeah. where can they find Beans and Rice?
Beans and Rice. So Beans with 3 Z's and Rice on Instagram, YouTube. We're on Spotify. I'm pretty sure we're on Apple Music. It's a show. I mean, people call it, we started calling it a podcast, but kind of turned into a show.
Yeah.
I encourage everyone to watch it. If you can, it makes it funnier.
It does.
It's very not safe for work. So plug in headphones. It's complete satire. We don't necessarily mean anything and everything we say. Sometimes we give cool, good advice, actual heartfelt advice at the end, but that's hit and miss. But it's literally just a comedy show where it's improv. We make fun of people. Beans and Rice, again, 3 Z's, Instagram or YouTube. Honestly, just follow us on YouTube if you're going to follow us anywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. Like I try to catch it live. Sometimes I can't. Sometimes, you know, my son's a little getting older, so he stays up a little later. I'm like, I can't watch this with you right here.
Yeah, and
so
I'll say
oftentimes
this.
I catch the replays, you know.
Yeah, Will's a bit more politically correct, okay, on this show. He has to be because of the market. But he's actually so good. When he joined our episode, feel free to go watch that one.
Oh, that was fun.
I was actually out because I was in Mexico once. And Gabino stepped in, but it was between him and Will.
I ethered. So Gabino has, you know, he's a great guy, okay? But when it comes to our talents being able to do this, it's, you know.
Did you say you would ether him? Is that what you were about to say?
Nah, I almost did, but then I couldn't. I don't. It's just such a term, right? Like, I don't even think ether was a better dish record.
Well, yeah. And not to mention, I think that Nas also had his hand in ruining hip hop. But that's a discussion for another time.
Ooh, I can't wait to hear that one. Jesus.
And he's my second favorite hip hop artist of all time.
Jay won the battle, though. Like,
The war. He won the war.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, man. Well, thank you very much. Stick around. I'm going to stop recording and thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week. I don't want to give away what we're doing next week because honestly, off the top of my head, I don't remember, but know it'll be fun. Know we will continue to celebrate hip hop's 50th birthday. Thank you, hosts. I hope you all enjoyed this week's episode. Thank you for listening again. Make sure to celebrate Loving Day. Shout out to everyone in Pride Month. Juneteenth, make sure you celebrate that. Make sure you subscribe to the Jazz Nation Patreon. Check out that Walker Kessler video. Until next time, follow the podcast on Instagram at the Will Wonder Pod. Follow me on Twitter at DJ Will Wonder. Subscribe to the Will Wonder Pod YouTube. And we'll see you next week. Peace.
Please subscribe, write, and review. Talk to you next time. Thanks for listening. Peace out.